Welcome to DesignOps Island Discs, the weekly podcast from Zero Height that navigates the calm waters of DesignOps with your host, me, Luke Murphy. I'm a design advocate at Zero Height, and I'm talking to the best folks in DesignOps to navigate us through what it takes to float DesignOps within your design org. For episode 2, I'm joined by Harjit Bahl, Senior Manager of DesignOps and Design Systems at Appnovation, a global full-service digital consultancy that helps their clients by creating innovative, people-inspired digital experiences. Harjit is an experienced UX designer and trainer who was brought in to build out a design innovation team and practice for Appnovation. Today, we're going to talk about how you go about running a DesignOps audit when you're spinning up your DesignOps function. So let's set sail.
It's funny. I feel like a lot of us that work in this space have a similar story in that we didn't really end up at DesignOps by way of like working up through DesignOps, but you're kind of doing it just being a designer. So, you know, I started off in pure UX and information architecture. And so I joke that the UX that I was doing for clients sort of like inverted on itself and became about my process.
Yeah.
So I started to UX myself, essentially the way that I was working. And that sort of filtered into frameworks and just processes that I had been lugging around this briefcase with me and just, you know, opening up at different companies that I've worked at and sharing that. And so it was a bit of a natural progression of my career and that the UX just sort of turned into, you know, how can I make the process of working on UX related work better and essentially enhance, you know, workflows, not only for myself, but for larger teams that I was a part of. And so the quickest answer to your question would be, you know, the most recent conversation I had in my current role with my boss, that was specifically around getting hired, was basically, well, what are you passionate about? What do you want to do? And I was essentially like, hey, you know what? Like, I've been in UX for quite a while, and now I feel like I really care to solve problems that are internal because they really reflect on the quality of work and the kind of work that you do for your clients. And so that essentially turned into, you know, a career in design ops. And it's still relatively, like, it's still a relatively new space. It's still hatching, right? So there's a lot of descriptions. There's a lot of interpretations of what it means to be in design ops. And so, you know, I was kind of trying to piece together what design ops could look like, not only for this organization, Appnovation, that I'm currently working at, but also how I want to contribute to the field overall. Yeah. And so for me, I think a lot of the background for design ops comes from a place of project or product management, which is then applied to design, which is, you know, I've kind of gone the opposite route of having come up through design. I've kind of moved into that more like operation space about how projects are set up and how we can track towards delivery in a way that is effective for everybody, starting with designers.
Yeah. And I suppose that's how we started talking, because we were talking, you were talking about this massive design ops audit that you did for Appnovation when you first started, which, I mean, I just love the fact that, you know, straight away you were in there talking to everyone, taking the time to actually make sure that you were approaching the problem in the right way. And I suppose actually that's what it comes down to, really, is that, as you said, your background is about solving problems for products or clients. All you're doing with design ops is just inverting that process and putting it back into the actual process of and the work that the designers are doing, right? And how we can solve the problems that are created within that.
Yeah, precisely. So to that point, I kind of knew coming in that like I was very interested in this forming space of design ops.
Yeah.
And it all just sort of like came together over a conversation with my boss, right? And then I had told him, I'm like, you know, if I, you know, were to start working for the organization, the first thing that I need to do and that I definitely want to do is talk to everybody. I just want to talk to people and get their most candid opinions and their thoughts, their concerns about how design is perceived at the organization, where it can be better, and then how we can do that, right? The how sort of came later, and that was, you know, that also needs to come from a place of, you know, objectivity and neutrality. Yep. So that was, it was a bit of an experiment, right? So I call it, I very lovingly refer to it as the investigation. So yep. I came in and I was like, okay, let me talk to as many people as possible, and not just people who are in design or design leadership, but specifically the people that work with design and design leadership, right? So
yeah.
I talked to almost like 40 key stakeholders across the company, and extended that those conversations to people in different regions, just because we want the work that is happening in operations, specifically design operations, to be region agnostic, for us to be able to translate and share the findings across the pond.
I'm really curious. So could you step us through, you know, what some of those questions you were asking were, what your actual process was for doing this full design ops audit?
Yeah, for sure. So just to give you a very high level summary at first, the 50,000 foot view, essentially I talked to a bunch of key internal stakeholders, right? And so I had like five, I would say, pretty open-ended questions that I asked these stakeholders. And first it was just like the get to know ya. And yep. It's just some background. So I started during the pandemic. So this was July of 2020, right? So I'm meeting everybody for the first time remotely. And so even that in itself was very interesting, because you form a bit of a deeper connection than you would in person. And I know that sounds a bit strange to say, but I guess when you're talking to somebody and you can kind of like see the window into their home, and then it's just you two, and that there's no other people walking around in an office setting, people tend to be more candid and they tend to share more freely, right? And so I was able to also get that focus from people in those one-on-one conversations. And so some of the questions I asked included things like, hey, like, please describe your role at the company. And then now, how, if at all, do you work with the design practice within this company? And then in your experience, how do you feel that the design practice needs to evolve? Can you identify any high priority issues that should be addressed immediately? And then how might a practical, this was a bit of a leading question, but how might a practical focus on design systems improve work or business for the company?
Yeah.
And that, you know, even with asking that question, there were quite a few people that, you know, didn't necessarily know what design systems were or had a different interpretation of it. So there was also some education along the way.
Ah, okay. That's really interesting. And then, so once you had all of that data, like, how did you actually go about, we all know how you'd synthesize it down, but I'm really interested mm-hmm. in how you prioritize those problems and how you actually, you know, figure out how you can make measurable change from that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was the challenging yet also strangely kind of fun part of the process. So in addition to those stakeholder interviews, I also talked to the design team directly as well. Those questions were a bit more free form. It was just like a bunch of question and answer. Just being able to talk really candidly again. And then I took I was typing scripts. I'm sure as a design ops person, I know better now that there's probably a better automated way to do it. Where I could just run like a software like Otter, you know, that takes dictation, right? But I just also kind of was in the flow. So I had a bunch of notes. So sitting in front of me were about 40 transcripts, right? And then from the design team, there were a bunch of like sticky notes. So just a bunch of insights. And so I took all that stuff and I essentially turned everything that I highlighted the scripts and pulled out things that were like very important insights.
Yep.
And I turned those into sticky notes in Miro. So again, I'm referring to all these digital platforms because we are very much remote. I don't have a whiteboard in front of me.
Yep.
And it kind of like, I was trying to also create something that was demonstrable to the larger team, and that like, hey, here's the process, right? So it's not that this investigative work happens in a vacuum, but it happens in a very documented way, right? So I was highlighting pieces from these transcripts and then turning them into sticky notes. And then I basically had a giant web of sticky notes, right? So you can imagine just like sticky note, sticky note, sticky note. And then I did some insights mapping. So I took all these sticky notes and I started to cluster them by theme. Yep. So I definitely wanted to look for consensus when it comes to things that people are pointing out, because that sort of indicates, you know, where people see the biggest problems. Not that it's, you know, necessarily going to give greatest priority to something that is greatest that is the agreed upon consensus, but it's just somewhere that needs more attention, so to speak. Right. So I clustered, you know, some of those common insights, and then I gave them these like theme names, and then I sort of attributed a weight to them based on, again, consensus. And so that's when I had this like three-step process of I have an insight, and then I will unpack it with a few notes, like specifically break down some of the issues. Right. And then I will come up with, you know, three proposed, I call them actions to take or remedies, because the word solution also means that, you know, one person might be coming up with the best way to solve it, but it's not necessarily the best way to solve it. Yeah. It's somebody's, you know, opinion, right? So still have to remain a bit objective there.
Yeah. It's a really interesting, I mean, because basically what you're explaining there is straight up a product design process, right? But as we said, just shifted.
Design research.
Yeah, it's design research and you know, early stage ideation and problem space setting. It's the stuff that should be bread and butter to most product designers. It's just that they don't quite often they don't have that reflective looking in. You know, it's all focused on delivery of the product and not actually speeding up the team or making life easier. And it's funny actually, because you mentioned the whole, you know, even though you do group those into themes, and the one that has the most dots, for example, it's not necessarily going to be the you know, the biggest problem that needs solving or whatever, but at the same time it's clearly a problem for a lot of people, and so therefore, you know, team happiness is one of the biggest roadblocks to actually delivering good work, right? So if you do solve those problems, you can quite often get some good results.
Yeah, and sometimes you can imagine, right? So sometimes with these conversations, you might run into certain issues where, you know, you see that two departments aren't necessarily collaborating in the most harmonious ways. So, you know, how do you sort of, you know, I guess once you have these interviews, once you do this research, you really build up that empathy, which again is at the core of what we do in UX, right? In design.
Yeah.
And so, you know, with that empathy in place, you're not just now having empathy for your team and where you're situated in the organization, which is within experience and design, but you now have empathy for people in product or project management, people in strategy, people in, you know, development and technology. So you understand the entire landscape. And I feel like with some companies in my past, there has been, you know, issues definitely where there are silos or, you know, two departments don't necessarily get along. There is some tension there. But, you know, if you really take the time to, you know, put the same TLC towards, you know, your internal teams and your internal ways of working, the same way that you do to a client project or to, you know, the different users of an experience that you are working on externally, you can really, you know, learn how to make things better, and you can really build up that empathy, which, you know, if you have empathy, you're able to have a discussion, right?
Well, and yeah, I mean, this is it. It's and you know, if you have empathy and you can actually, you know, if you can get to the root of the problems and you can solve the problems, then what you're going to end up with is a much happier, effective, efficient team, which is ultimately going to end up delivering better better services to your clients or better products to your customers. It does make sense, but I think it's because it is abstracted away from, you know, what the business is making money from. A lot of people just don't put the value on it. And so it's interesting actually. And coming back to that, like how are you measuring this? So like how are you actually going to your bosses and saying, this is the measurable impact I'm going to make on this?
That is a great question. So I would first and foremost love to give a shout out to my boss. He is the VP of experience at AppNovation. His name is Anton Morrison. And so he really brought me in as kind of an investment for the team and the practice. And so the focus was there from day one, right? And that like, we are going to put somebody on an internal, you know, piece of work to help build up the practice. So I had that support coming in, and that was the result of many conversations around what I wanted to do and where he saw the practice needing support. So there was that as well. And then one of the things that I wanted to do from just an accountability perspective was to take the insights and the sort of like the issues that I had learned about and sort of make sure that they laddered up to business goals, right? Because the company still has to be profitable. People still have to, you know, be happy and learning. So, you know, there are a few like goals that I have that are associated with design ops and design systems, which is, you know, the practice of which that I oversee now as a whole collectively. I've called it design innovation because essentially it's, you know, it's a small nimble team. I've already made two hires to support the two different streams of design ops and design systems. And so we're now really acting as a support unit for the larger team. And so we are meant to work on both long-term internal initiatives that support the company be able to work on client projects in a much more nimble, faster way, but then also make sure the team is getting what they need to make sure that we attract and retain top talent. So that is, again, directly tied to a business goal. Yeah. To optimize our design practice for agile. That is, again, another, you know, push for how we're trying to get a little bit better in that, you know, we're trying to have people stay on longer, but leaner. For a lot of the design engagements that we have, right? We want to be award-winning, both as like a work environment, but also in the work that we do. We want to help our clients build design teams. If they don't have a design team or if they're having to rely on external vendors, we want to shore them up with the team, the skill set, and the confidence to sort of run and do this on their own. And then also, you know, tackle this hot new territory of design systems to become a design system partner, right? And there are a few specific metrics against some of those goals that will allow us to track and see, you know, how we're tracking towards those things. Some of them are just making hires, switching the kind of tools that we use to new innovative tools, being able to secure new kinds of work contracts with clients and making sure that the right kind of work is coming through the door, making sure that the velocity of team output is much more efficient and effective. So there are quite a few things. And I wanted to make sure that like coming into this role, that it wasn't just, you know, Monopoly money being used to, you know, tell a romantic story, but something that was actually going to push the dial on, you know, productivity.
This is exactly what we have. Like, it's with the, so at Zero Height, where we work with a lot of folks with their design systems, it's exactly the same thing. It's a lot of, I don't know, I feel like there was a point about 5 years ago where clearly a lot of senior leaders went to conferences and heard the word design systems and just decided they needed it for their company without actually thinking of anything to do with how to measure it and how to see whether it was effective and how you could actually get adoption. And so, yeah, we've been seeing this a lot over the last couple of years where it's like, oh God, how do we actually measure this and see if it's effective instead of just making sure that we're, you know, at the forefront of what designers
ticking
are doing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's So out of this design ops audit, I'm curious, like, were there any surprising things to you that came out of it?
Yeah, there were. I had like a list of like about 20 key insights.
Yeah.
All of which I unpacked, and I'll call out one of the ones that I found especially important to sort of focus on. One was like establishing a almost like communities of practice within the organization. So specifically what I mean by that are, and maybe I'll unpack that issue a little bit, but you know, there are cases in the organization where you have a few different people from a few different disciplines or departments that take ownership of a deliverable or a segment of work within a project. project, right? So you may run into the issue of a designer who is doing, you know, journey mapping or user flows in a certain way. Then you might have a strategist who is doing that work also, but in a certain way. And then you might have somebody from a data perspective who is also doing their own version of that, right? And so, you know, you get different lenses and you get different approaches to the same kind of work essentially, but it's not really coming together in a holistic way. And so, you know, setting up a structure that allowed us to have COPs or communities of practice was a way to sort of remedy or action on that, right? Where we are now holding space in biweekly meetings, in collective Slack channels, where we bring together a strategist, somebody from design, somebody from data, and just put those teams together in a room and say, hey, let's talk about our approach to research as a whole, because research is not going to happen, you know, just by this person or that person. It's going to happen together, right? And also, you know, I feel like consultancy side, we tend to get in situations where, you know, people will pick and choose the resources that they want. But if you are part of a collective where you know as a designer that a strategist will bring this lens and this set of deliverables for this specific piece of work that are maybe outside of the reach of, you know, your direct practice, that might be somebody that you can call on and bring attention to when you're on a client project. And remember that, oh, that strategist actually does this that way, and they would be very helpful to have on this project as well. It'll just make the journey mapping experience a lot more complete, and we'll get this other layer to it that we can't have if it's just somebody from design who is doing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny actually, because I feel like, especially in a company, because AppNovation is quite a large company, large distributed company, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And I can imagine that that is something that is just, that happens very easily, where you get these pockets of of overlap and it's lots of what's the word that I'm looking for? It's just same people working on the same things at the same time, and you just get
loads of it. But it's a lot funny of muscle memory and silos that result.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny though, because I've even had that in companies much smaller, you know, 50, 60 person product teams, where just because you're sitting in different practices, we had the exact same thing where we had, you know, data people doing the exact same research that the design people were doing just because they weren't talking to each other. And it's like, so that does make sense, and it does, you know, travel across all different types of companies as well. So I'm curious, so I've, you know, the last episode that we recorded of this, we were talking about the whole everything that comes under the design ops sort of umbrella, which feels at the moment as a lot of different areas. And, you know, having seen the audit that you produced for AppNovation, I mean, it covers off a lot of different areas, which is great. I'm just curious, is there a single area that you sort of feel brings, you know, inherent value straight away that you'd, you know, look at if you were jumping into a company, you'd be like, oh, I should probably check this out first, especially sort of in terms of sort of amplifying that design value?
Yes, absolutely. So let me go from broad to narrow, and I'll tell you the node. So I have this map where, you know, here are all the things that design ops concerns itself with, and then the node that lit up the most in my time here that I feel like is something that I would focus on again and again, were it to come up again. So design ops specifically, in the way that I've aimed to define it for this organization, has been to include two substreams. So one is looking at ways to support the design team and the management for that team, right? And so that shakes out in a few different ways. It's putting a focus on team meetings, team culture, onboarding, and then just serving as an overall help desk for the team. The second part of that is putting a focus on resourcing and skill sets and career paths, right? So helping to create a departmental structure that works, right? Like sometimes you go into companies and like the titling and the leveling structure is a little bit off. It's kind of scattered. It's not cohesive. It's not linear. And so of course the team wants to stay if they are excited about how to evolve and take their careers forward. Yep. And then also they want to be recognized for, one of my previous bosses used to call this like majors and minors. So similar to how universities are set up, you kind of like have that within the skill set of being a designer. you might be somebody who's more research oriented or somebody who's more visual design leaning, right? So making sure that there is space for that and some place where you can sort of consolidate people's skill sets. And, you know, I have a very intricate set of templates for measuring that from a team perspective that live in like Google Sheets, basically coming from Google Form surveys, but that's a totally different conversation for another time. And then the second node is all about playbook and tooling. So, you know, what are the recipes for discovery, for research, for design activities that naturally unfold as you take on a client project? And then tooling, right? So this is taking a look at like, what are all the tools that we use? You know, the Figmas, the Sketches, the accounts for Optimizely, user testing, any kind of tool that you could have, right? And like really consolidating that set of tools so that it makes IT's life a lot easier. You know, they're handling a lot of the tooling and like the licenses. So, you know, working directly with IT and making sure the team gets what they need as well. But so to answer your question, the node that lit up the most is that last one, tooling. Tooling is interesting. So important. And I feel like this is the reason that we got connected, to be perfectly honest, is I have learned over the course of my career that, you know, processes will come and go, recipes will come and go. They will evolve with the landscape of UX and design. But one thing that you should keep a very close watch on is the kind of tools that you use. And so a part of this is also the ability to be very innovative and see what's coming down around the corner. And being somebody who is an early adopter or somebody that's just able to get their team to sample and trial it out so that you can decide whether or not it's something that will bring value to you. So, you know, we've been going through a lot of tools in design over the past 10 years, you know, like Photoshop to Azure to Sketch to, you know, now arguably Figma. And there's just a lot to be said. And given that we're remote now as well, the focus on platforms like Miro, where you can do virtual whiteboarding and workshops, is so important. And so, you know, I'm going to reference that very popular Marshall McLuhan quote, which is the medium is the message. Yeah. Might be a little bit too deep for this conversation, but I really do believe, you know, the tools that you use dictate the kind of work that you can do and how efficient you can be, how collaborative you can be. And it is something that is pretty much a fundamental piece of design ops as a whole.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think having the right tools for the job, and whether that is, you know, your day-to-day, you know, actual, what you do your designs in. So whether that's your Figma or your Sketch, I mean, if you have the right tool to get that done, and it works with your process and workflow, it can just it gets out of the way, right? It allows you to actually do the creative work and the problem solving that you're there to do instead of just constantly being hampered by your tools. But then also I feel like, and it's a space that, you know, it feels like is finally coming into its own within design, but governance tooling as well. Like, actually, how do you maintain quality as an organization? How do you communicate that out to people? I mean, coming from Zero Height, that would make sense. I feel like I'm 100% on board. Tooling, if you've got the right tools for the job, it just allows everything else to run smoothly, right?
100%. And again, this is the reason why we started talking, because as I was doing my audit, I was like, you know, we're going to have a deeper focus on design systems. And the trend now in the industry is not to create things from scratch. It's not to over customize or over architect things. So what are existing tools and plugins that allow you to pull one source file into another environment to automatically populate things and to make sure that we can set up those pipelines very efficiently. And so Zero Height, as a part of our design system stack, is one of the tools that's been on our radar for quite a while. And we're excited to just use something that delivers outside of the box, that, you know, has regular maintenance and updates that we can, you know, pull from.
Thanks for doing my job for me. So I think that's actually, I mean, I could sit here and talk for hours, but I think that's a good place that we can probably get you in your boat and set you off to the desert island. So thank you so much for joining today, Harjit. It's been fantastic. Okay, so before we cast you off today to your island, you get to take one piece of music, one piece of literature, and one luxury item so that you can spend your days in happiness on the desert island. So what are those three?
Oh, this is a great question. Okay, so I'm in my boat, and I know that I'm probably going to be away from humanity, probably forever. So on my way to this island, I definitely want the music that I want is late 90s, early 2000s hip hop and R&B. I feel like I have a few good like burn CDs that I can sort of pull from. Because for some reason I've decided to go a bit more analog with my technology.
I mean, it makes sense, yeah. What happens if there's really bad, you know, you can't just take a Spotify playlist and hope that there's good mobile signal on the island. It's
exactly.
Yeah.
I'll just drain the batteries on my Discman. And then for literature, I would, you know what, since I'm going to be away from humanity, I've read the Laws of Human Nature by Robert Greene. And I feel like that will sort of connect me to why or why not I have been, you know, like decided to move away from humanity. Like if I miss the rest of the world, I will draw from the examples in that book.
Oh, perfect. And the luxury item? I mean, that one's a big one.
For sure, that would have to be a really nice bed with some like high thread count sheets. Because, I don't want to, I can't sleep on sand. You know, if you're going to spend the rest of your day, spend it on a nice mattress.
I mean, I just love the visual of a desert island beach with this just beautiful, you know, king size, super king size bed.
Yeah,
definitely.
Thank you so much to Harjit for joining us on Design Ops Island Discs. We'll leave him cozy in his big bed with his swanky sheets reading the Laws of Human Nature. If you'd like to follow Harjit, he's a self-confessed social media avoider, but you can peruse his website at harjit.io, that's harjot.io, or connect with him on LinkedIn at Harjit Bal, B-A-L. You can also follow AppNovation on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram at AppNovation. They are hiring as well, so check that out. And if you want to hear more from their team, they're participating in the Forrester CX event from June 7th to 9th. This podcast is brought to you by Zero Height, the design system documentation platform. You can jump in at any point and create your first style guide for free by heading over to zeroheight.com/podcast. Make sure you add that last part in so that you let them know that we sent you. For the next episode, we set sail for the west coast of the US, where I speak to Meredith Black about how to build out your design ops team. Until then, bon voyage.